This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this show, more moments of history in the making this week as it's official. Ties between Israel and the UAE and Israel and Bahrain have officially been normalized. Deputy Israeli Ambassador Sharon Bar-Li will discuss that and more. As JLGB celebrates its 125th birthday, His Royal Highness Prince Charles has been announced as the patron of the youth organisation. CEO Neil Martin OBE tells us more. And sticking with the royal theme, their Royal Highnesses the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge paid a visit to Brick Lane's famous bagel bake. Elias Cohen tells us what they got up to. Oh, and as if all of that isn't enough, comedian Ashley Blaker is back with his take on the world as we've come to know it. But before all of that, it's time to look through your copy of the Jewish News, and joining me to go through it is editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Phil.
What's it, Phil?
It's, good Lord, you're in a bit of a jolly mood today, Mr. Ferrer. Anyway, let's have a look, shall we? Let's see if we can get rid of that straight away. Let's have a look at the front page, and let's start off with I don't think I'm ever going to get sick of talking about what's going on in the Middle East at the moment, because this is a picture that I didn't think I'd ever see in my lifetime. Middle Eastern promise, and you have the leaders of America, Israel, UAE, and Bahrain all in a row together.
You wait 25 years for a peace deal, and then two come along at once. It's an extraordinary picture. Of course, an idealist would say this is a glorious moment in the history of Israel and Middle East politics, a coming together of mortal enemies after seven decades, and a hopeful, prosperous future for the region. And of course, it is that. It's also perhaps, and I've read it elsewhere, something a little less. You know, the treaty is being signed by two countries Israel's never had a war with. Thousands of miles from Israel's borders. It's not as if it's Egypt or Jordan that these peace treaties are being signed by. And also, it's being spearheaded by two men that are desperate for a bit of a PR boost right now. Trump is, you know, facing Biden, kicking him out of the White House in just a few weeks' time. Netanyahu has a trial for corruption, and Benny Gantz hovering over his shoulder, due to take over as prime minister at the end of next year. So the cynic in me can see all that. But yes, I think we need to celebrate where celebration is due. There aren't many celebrations when it comes to political understanding and common ground in the Middle East. So yes, it's a very, very special day. And that is a very, very special picture.
You know what, Justin, I'm getting so fed up of the doomsayers, and there are those out there, and I suppose you could always guarantee it, but even on the mainstream media the other day when this was being spoken about, it had to bring up the subject of Palestinians. And for heaven's sakes, it wasn't as if this was anything to do with the plight of Palestinians, and no one is saying whether or not that is an ideal situation or not. But the upshot is that this is a peace agreement or a normalisation of ties between countries that until within the last couple of weeks weren't normalized. So shouldn't we be focusing on that?
Absolutely. I do think that the description of these two deals as a peace treaty is probably slightly misleading, in that the countries haven't been at war as such. But it was, you know, you could say it was a Cold War that's existed between Israel and much of the Arab world since its creation 72 years ago. And so the very fact that these countries were able to come together, were able to bring what was a very covert relationship for the last 26 years out into the open, and they did have ties for 26 full years. So since the last peace agreement was signed by Israel, there were contacts between Israel and the UAE. And I just think that, you know, you have to consider the fact that until 4 weeks ago, the world was saying there's no way there could be any kind of normalization between Israel and the Arab world until there was a peace treaty between Israel and the Palestinians. And really, Donald Trump, as he does, and as he's done on a number of occasions in the last 4 years, has turned convention on its head. And you'd have to say, and you may not find much complimentary stuff about Donald Trump on this podcast, you'd have to say that if he hadn't have been in the White House, if he hadn't have taken a different approach, and maybe if the man that everyone said had no experience in this field, Jared Kushner, hadn't have been at the fore, perhaps this wouldn't have happened. And we do have to thank both Netanyahu and Trump and the leaders of the UAE and Bahrain for getting us to this point, whatever you think about their wider policies.
Couldn't agree with you more. It's very simple. Praise where praise is due. Now, let's move a little closer to home, shall we? Chief Rabbi says, don't risk lives of others. Urgent virus warning as community prepares for New Year. This is the other story on the front page.
Yeah, this is really a very significant intervention from the Chief Rabbi and a very important intervention that we were keen to push through the front page. This weekend, as people gather in far smaller numbers than would normally be the case in synagogues and at prayer services, in fact, we revealed this week that some of the shuls are as much as 90% down on their attendance. The Chief Rabbi is saying here in very clear terms that people need to adhere to every guideline that the government has issued. And it was very clear earlier this week how concerned, I guess, the government and how on top of it the government was in terms of the dangers that this period can present for the Jewish community in terms of coming together, in terms of the impulse to gather as large families, because they issued specific guidance, a long document, specific guidance on how to observe Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur and Sukkot in a socially distanced and COVID-friendly way. And that was totally unprecedented, as everything in this era seems to be. And the Chief Rabbi clarifying that by gathering in ways that the government doesn't want us to and in ways that are not COVID safe, you're putting other people's lives at risk, not just your own.
Absolutely. Well, that is the other story on the front page. And I dare say that Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot and all the high holy days are going to be rather different this year, to say the least. Now, let's have a look at one of the other stories. Page 3 of the paper. Lib Dems suspend candidate. What's happened, Rich?
Yeah, this is a story about Geeta Sidhu Rob, who back in 1997 stood as a candidate against Jack Straw in the election. She was a young woman back then, and she did something terrible, which she has admitted this week in an op-ed to us. She ran an anti-Semitic campaign. She drove around. The video is there for anyone who wants to see it, saying Jack Straw is a Jew. Jack Straw is a Jew. Don't vote for Jack Straw. Of course, Jack Straw, I think, has Jewish ancestry, but I certainly don't think he's Jewish. Anyway, that's beside the point. My point in bringing this up is not really to judge her in any way, just simply to ask people to, after all these years, read her mea culpa in the paper this week, and you will see the difference between a trite, sorry, not sorry guff that we heard month after month, year after year, during the Corbyn years of the Labour Party, and genuine remorseful contrition. This woman, in my view anyway, is a genuine, decent woman who deserves a second chance in much the same way as the community gave Nashar a second chance all those years ago now. She's written about how she's matured. She's a mother of three children. She's a businesswoman. She helps charities and helps women contribute to society. She's a very changed person. When I look back on the person I was in 1997 compared to as I am today, I'm sure I've changed considerably and in many different ways. I would hate to be judged by those terms today. I would, call on anyone who I'm sure is deeply mortified and upset by that video, as I was, to now read her piece. She holds her hands up and definitely deserves to be heard and to be read.
I would also say that although I couldn't agree more with Richard in terms of this being an absolutely genuine apology, and my understanding from those that know her is that she doesn't usually pronounce on these subjects and she doesn't, usually have strong opinions. This was someone lashing out at the time, and there can be no excuse for that. But if we're looking at the example of Naz Shah, for example, she followed a very genuine apology by many actions and reaching out to the community and getting to know the community and visiting synagogues and so on. I think that the Geeta Sidhu Rob has probably seen her political career go up in smoke with these revelations. But in terms of being a person, in terms of getting on with her life and in terms of, reaching out to the community, there's still much she could be that can be done. And hopefully we'll see her doing some of that.
Well, you know what? I think that everyone can change their views and deserves a second chance once in a while. So I am sure that when you read that on page 3, you'll be able to make your own mind up. Gents, thank you both very much indeed. And might I say at this point, Shana Tova to both of you.
And to you, Phil. Shana Tova, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Okay, that's very much all we have time for a look at the paper for this week. But don't forget, though, that you can pick up your copy of the Jewish News every Thursday, or if you are isolating, then you will be able to find the full copy, as it would be printed, online at jewishnews.co.uk. Editor Richard Ferrer, news editor Justin Cohen, thank you both very much.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, this week, history unfolded before us. Israel signed peace treaties with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain at the White House. It was on Tuesday. And of course, President Donald Trump was there, and he called the moment the dawn of a new Middle East. Well, frankly, I don't often say this, I think President Trump is absolutely right. And to talk about this more, I'm very, really delighted to say that joining us is Sharon Bar-Li, the Deputy Ambassador for Israel. Sharon, first and foremost, thank you so much for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to speak to us. We're very, very grateful to you for that. Dawn of a new era, I think it's the only way to begin to explain it, isn't it?
Thank you for having me, Phil. I think this is not less than an historic event, and indeed a dawn of a new era, because what we are witnessing here is actually a change of paradigm in the Middle East. I think that it's really outstanding that you get Arab countries voluntarily reaching out to Israel, wanting to normalize relations with Israel, actually saying out loud to the world that they realize that Israel is a force for good. They realize that we share similar challenges in the region and that we better face them together. And moreover, when we work together through this agreement and through the normalizations of relations, what we're doing, we're actually stabilizing the region. We are strengthening the moderate camp in the region, and we are deepening the security of the region. And this is, of course, beyond all the bilateral benefits and the prosperity that we are about to experience.
You know, there is one thing that really disappoints me, but I suppose it's not really a surprise. But look, I don't want to give it too much oxygen. But of course, there are the naysayers out there. There are those who say, well, actually, these are countries that Israel wasn't really at war with. There wasn't really a problem with them in the first place. But please, will you help them to realize why they are so wrong to think like that? Why this is amazing?
Well, it is amazing because it's going to change the way that this region is going to look like. It's going to spill over beyond the immediate Middle East, beyond the immediate neighbors of Israel. We are going to see more countries to follow the Gulf countries that just signed the agreements with Israel, both from the Gulf and from the extended Middle East. And frankly, I truly believe that this is going to reignite the peace process with the Palestinians as well.
Please God, wouldn't that be a wonderful thought, and especially a wonderful hope just in time for the new year? Obviously, we are fast approaching 5781, Rosh Hashanah. And what are your hopes for the new year?
First of all, we are starting this year with new beginnings in the Middle East, new winds of change in the Middle East. So I'm really hopeful that this is going to be a year of peace, a year of prosperity. But more than anything, I would like to wish all of us a healthy year. I really hope, and I do believe, that by continuing to work together, as Israel do, together with the UK and with other countries in the world, we will be able to find a vaccine to the coronavirus. We will be able to get more sophisticated, reliable, and quick diagnostic systems for the virus. And the same way that we are facing it now together, sharing the same challenges and having to face the same restrictions, I hope that in the coming year, we will overcome this. I hope we will be able to welcome to Israel all the members of the Jewish community who were really looking forward to come to Israel this year and couldn't do so because of the virus. And I'm hoping that we'll be more united.
I'm so pleased that you mentioned this because honestly, I find myself pining, I think is the only word I can use, okay? Mm. Because I was due to go, like so many, I was due to go to Israel earlier this year, and obviously it had to be cancelled. And now, although it's been moved to the, for me anyway, to the end of April for next year, which somehow seems a long way away, but I dare say it will come around very quickly. But even though it has been moved and I know I've got it to look forward to, there's something just so uncertain about it. And that's the problem, isn't it? Is Israel feeling the pinch of this lack of tourism and the lack of people visiting it?
Before the lack of tourism, I think that the pinch is being away from our brothers and sisters, from the diaspora Jews. I mean, we are one family. We are one people. We have families. We have homes. We have friends. And what is more natural than being together in the holidays? Therefore, this is what is most painful, at least for me. But I want to say that although we cannot visit each other, Israel is here through the embassy. We are here. And I think that the virus brought us to realize that we can find many new and creative ways to be together, to stay in contact, maybe even more than in the past in many different ways. And we will continue to do so until you will be able to visit Israel physically.
Well, there's a nice thought, and hopefully it will come soon before long. Now, look, just finally, it would be remiss of me not to mention that there has been, obviously we know that Mark Regev has now left position as Israeli ambassador to UK, and we now know that Tzipi Hotovely is incoming as the new ambassador. However, however, it has been, I think tarnished is not too strong a word, with some controversy. Some people have expressed views that some might find unsavory, some might find justified towards Tzipi. Now, she's not here, so I'm not going to start talking about Tzipi, but I want to know from your perspective, the future of the Embassy of Israel, what do you feel about it? Because you probably know better than anyone else.
Well, I have to tell you that we are looking forward to welcome Ambassador Hotovely to London. It's the first time that we're going to have a woman ambassador, relatively young, a mother of three young children, an Orthodox lady, not from an Ashkenazi origin. I mean, just think of it. She's a real trailblazer. And I think that it's not really a bad thing also to have an ambassador who is just a phone call away from the prime minister. You know, many countries appoint political appointees as ambassadors. She used to be a politician, but now she's going to turn into a diplomat. We all have personal opinions. We're locking them in a box and we're throwing the key to the sea for at least 3-4 years for the tenure of our posting. And we are representing our government and the policies of our government. And this is exactly what Ambassador Hotovely is going to do. And frankly, I can think about one or two skills that a successful politician has to have, which can be useful also in diplomacy. So I'm really looking forward to welcome her and to have this girl power at the embassy.
Well, we look forward to seeing what girl power at the embassy has to offer, because obviously we look forward to welcoming Tzipi Hotovely, Ambassador Tzipi Hotovely, in the coming days, to, well, the coming weeks, the months, whenever it is. Who knows now, to be honest with you. But in the meantime, Sharon Bali, Deputy Ambassador for the UK and Israel, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Phil. And Shana Tova.
Shana Tova. This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, as JLGB gets ready to celebrate its 125th birthday, what an achievement in itself. His Royal Highness Prince Charles has been unveiled as patron of the organisation. That's no doubt going to be a bit of a boost for the youth organisation. And I think there's only one man we could possibly speak to now to find out more about it. Neil Martin, OBE, is the CEO of, oh, I got the whole alphabet in there, is of the charity. And I'm delighted to say that he joins me now. Neil, first and foremost, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on the Jewish News podcast. 125 years, that's nothing to be sniffed at.
No, it's a great achievement and still going strong, but it's part of British Jewry for its history and has done so many things that I'm sure we'll talk about.
We certainly will do, but let's get on to that in a moment because we must start off with very exciting news. As I say, His Royal Highness Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, has been unveiled as the patron. Well, that is most certainly one heck of a boost for the organisation, is it not?
I don't think there's a greater accolade than to have the royal family attribute themselves to what we're doing. It's a great seal of approval. And what's great about it is it says thank you to the thousands of volunteers and leaders over 125 years, done some great things, but it also puts a great faith in the future. We haven't reached peak of the Jewish community's work in British society. There's so much more to come. So this future monarch has said to us, thank you for what you've done so far. I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming next.
And what I quite like about this as well is that for some reason, Jewish Lads and Girls Brigade, I've always sort of had people associate, and I've known people to associate with sort of yesteryear, but not the here and now. And of course, the organisation still goes strong. You still do great work. Now's the chance to show off. Tell us what JLGB is doing in 2020.
Well, I think, first of all, its mission is not much different to what it was 125 years ago, which is to give young people the best possible chance to succeed and to reach their potential. And in exchange for us helping them to do that, they must give back to society. That couldn't be more true today as it was then. But we're at the cutting edge of digital technology, skills-based things, etc. We've led the way across the community proudly with virtual activities during coronavirus, our Evolve system for volunteering awards. So we may be an organisation that goes back a long way, but that gives us the foundations to also be an organisation that can look to the future. We're only as good as the next thing we do.
And I suppose that there are actually quite a lot of parallels, if you think about it, between a lot of what the royal family promotes and what JLGB actually do. You mentioned about sort of giving back to the community, and that's a lot of what the royal family do, especially with schemes such as Duke of Edinburgh, and also just the great work that they do themselves for charity. So I suppose it sort of makes sense, really, to have Prince Charles as a patron.
Yeah, I think everyone strives to be relevant, and everyone strives to wrestle with keeping the relevant nostalgia and traditions and also being right for the next generation of people, be it young people or society. And I think that's something that we've definitely wrestled with, but also have done well with it. We're unveiling a lot of changes for our next 125 years. And of course, we were very digitally savvy before coronavirus, but have been leaps ahead since. And now we have a sharp focus of what comes next. And I think the same is true with every charity, with every organization, with every with the royal family. This has given us an opportunity in recent months as well to know what's necessary for the future and to be leading the way.
Well, let's look at that a bit further, because obviously JLGB, like many organisations during COVID, have had to adapt, and I shouldn't wonder, probably quite hastily as well, adapt to a new way of functioning. Obviously, JLGB itself is normally quite hands-on. People go places, they actually physically get together, and that couldn't happen recently. So what have you guys been doing to make sure that the organisation survives and keeps up its great work?
We've been doing a lot that we're extremely proud of, and it's something that historically we'll look back on as a moment, as we will do as other parts of our history, and say how we adapted, how we led during a crisis, as we did in two world wars, for example, in a variety of ways. And obviously we couldn't meet, and kids can't go out and volunteer, and they can't do a variety of things. And our common denominator, our baseline, was we need to be there to ensure that young people have something to do, can keep their wits about them, because it's not been easy for 25 weeks being, for most of that time, being stuck at home. And so we wanted to be that safe space, that structured space where chaos around them, they knew every night between 6:30 and 9:30, there'd be a virtual activity program for them. And we reached out to a variety of people and a variety of celebrities along the way. And I think we've now done about 78 shows, over 200 and something hours of programming over 25 weeks. And we've been seen by 1.8 million people on Facebook, because
wow.
the whole world needs lightening up and acts of kindness and a celebrity. And of course, celebrities and others have been at home, and certain Jewish celebrities around the world and celebrities of other faiths as well have just said, I'm at home. Here's a good thing that's happening. We're spreading positivity. I'm in. And we're from around the world. We've had the best of the best on, and it's been phenomenal and possibly the best thing we've ever done.
Well, 125 years, as I mentioned at the start of this, is what you are celebrating, JLGB 125, as it rather appropriately says in your backdrop to anyone who is watching this on social media. Tell us, what is the organization going to do to mark such an auspicious occasion?
So our anniversary, obviously, has been the whole year. And so we were going to do a variety of things in January. And I should mention the biggest thing we were going to do, and a similarity to this podcast, was have our 125th anniversary summer camp, which was sponsored by GPG. And for 125 camp, summer camp was only 125. And we were going to have over 800 people had taken up that offer. And of course, that couldn't happen. Very kindly, thanks to GPG, we're going to roll that forward to 126. Hopefully next August that'll happen. We hope to have 1,000 people. And so we'll do 126 for 126. I'm sure people won't mind paying an extra pound for the privilege. But numerous things we would have done, fundraising dinners, nostalgia evenings, new activity, etc., all completely kiboshed, as everyone else's plans are as well. But actually, that might have been a bit same. So the virtual experience, and to mark our 125 in this backdrop of things, and actually to remind people of our purpose. I think what's great about this, and it connects to the patronage, is I think JLGB, as our president, Lord Levy, would say, is a Cinderella organization. It's uncredited for many things that it's done in society. If you look back over the history of buildings that were built or things that were done or decisions were made, often JLGB was connected in the early days. And it's just now part of the furniture. But I think what this has done and other things is reminded people that we've got the best of the best youth organization that's respected in the community, in the wider youth sector, by government, and now in paper and publicly by the royal family as well, that we are, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, I'd say that if we ain't seen nothing yet, I personally look very much forward to seeing what we are going to see in the next 125 years. Oh, obviously, we won't be around for all of it. For as much as we are, I look forward to it.
But I'm going to try.
Aren't we both? But Neil Martin, OBE and CEO of JLGB, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast. And Shana Tovah.
You too. Thanks, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, on to one of my favorite subjects. We're going to continue the royal theme now, but it's time to talk. Well, I'm going to stand firm. I'm going to say bagels, but I know I'm about to get told off for this, because the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge paid a visit to one of the most iconic spots in London. Well, if you're Jewish, it is anyway. Bagelbake, as I've been correctly told is the way of pronouncing it, on Brick Lane, welcomed the royal visitors this week, who I believe, rather than just like the rest of us, popped in for a rather splendid salmon and cream cheese bagel, actually got their hands dirty as well. Well, Elias Cohen works at Bagelbake. He's from the family that own the business, and I'm delighted to say he joins us on the Jewish News Podcast now. Elias, first and foremost, welcome to the Jewish News Podcast. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
And thank you.
It's been a lifelong ambition.
Oh, thank you. It's so nice of you to lie like that. And so thank you also for being prepared to talk about one of my favourite subjects. No, I'm not talking about the royals. I'm talking about just the roundness of perfection that is a bagel or a bagel. Please tell us, first and foremost, what was it like welcoming the royal visitors?
It was a breath of fresh air. They were so lovely, really down to earth. Just your average people. That's how they came across. Was so eager to learn as much about the business as possible within half an hour, and just was asking countless questions, which was great to see. And they seemed so amazed by the whole operations of it and everything we had on offer. And we managed to get their hands dirty, which was great to see. There's plenty of photos and videos of that. And they really didn't want to leave, but by the end of it, their advisor was like, come on, we got to go, we got to get out of here. And they kind of had to force.
Can I just say, to be fair to their Royal Highnesses, that's a little bit like my friends are with me whenever I come to Bagelbake as well. They're like, come on, can we go already? No,
that's what I'm saying. I think they had the full experience that you could possibly expect that any other average Joe, if you want to say, has had.
Well, why not?
Yeah, I did that. You stay in the shop for a bit too long and you're getting told off by others. Come on, we've got to get out of it.
Oh, I get in so much trouble whenever I go to that place. Seriously, I love it. How the hell do you stay so thin? I know people can't see this on the podcast, but for heaven's sakes, you're surrounded by so much carbohydrate. And you're like the size of a rake.
I've got my mom's jeans. I'm blessed. If I had my dad's jeans, it would be a different story.
Excellent. Well, before you get in trouble with your father, or worse still, I get in trouble with him. Let's have a.
I just lost my job. I better find another one if you have an opening.
Let's rewind a little bit, shall we? Because how did this come about? Because I'm guessing that unlike your average customers who probably just turn up when they're peckish, you kind of had to know a little bit in advance that the Royal Cup were coming.
Yeah, it was all kept on the secret, as expected. We just got a call one day into the shop, a random guy with a very posh English accent. I spoke with him and he basically said, I've just sent you an email to this address. I can't remember what it was exactly, but it ended up not being the right email address. So I gave him the right email address, didn't really think much of it, and just awaited his email. And then as we received his email a few hours later, just looking at his footnote at the bottom, it said, communication leader of the royal family. So I thought, okay, fine, maybe this is something potentially big. And we just had a back and forth correspondence, and soon after, one of his other team members had just given us a call. We had a conference meeting, and at that point did I realize who exactly would potentially be coming down, that being the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. And obviously we're absolutely buzzing, but really didn't expect it to take place, to be honest. Luckily, a few weeks later, that's when they came down to the shop, and everything was run so smoothly and eloquently, and their team was absolutely amazing, and they were really pleased with how it all went.
So I know that obviously there's client confidentiality and all of that, but between you and me, what did they order?
So we gave them a gift basket in anticipation that they wanted to have some things, but we gave them a gift basket with some personalised aprons and some of our best-selling products, that being the cheesecake and the smoked salmon and cream cheese, some plain bagels, and they took some hot plain bagels that they helped make straight out of the oven, took them home with them.
So this wasn't a joke. They actually did get their hands dirty, didn't they? They actually helped in making some of the bagels.
Yeah, they like I said, they wanted to know everything, every single process. It was almost to a T that they wanted to start up a bakery of their own, it seemed like. And, asking the measurements, how long you put it in the boiler for, how long you put it in the oven for, what exactly properly knead the dough. And, you know, we were just in awe that, you know, we thought they would come in, just take a backseat role, just be polite and just enjoy the experience. But really, they want to know everything as much as they could.
But hang on a second. Hang on. I'm sorry. There have been people in the community who have been after Bagel Bake secrets for years. Are you telling me that you gave them away to the future monarchs?
No. We can't disclose all of our secrets.
I was going to say, that would be...
You don't want to upset anybody, so we said as much as we could that any other person could find out for themselves.
What was it like for you on a personal level? Because it's not every day you meet royalty.
No, it was great. Initially, you're a bit starstruck, but very soon after, when they're just nice, personable people, you're just having a normal conversation, like with anyone. What I was amazed was how tall they were. I wasn't expecting that.
Do you know what? I haven't met them, but I know people who have, and they all say the same thing, that they just tower over everyone.
Yeah, they really do.
But anyway, well, it's fine. Also, let's be honest. I'm sorry, but sort of coming to meet people in the Jewish community, it's inevitable, really. Let's be honest.
I completely agree. Yeah.
So all in all, it lasted about half an hour that they were there. And it looked like, from the photos anyway, that you had quite a large crowd gathered outside as well.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Without dropping anyone in, might I suggest as well, it doesn't look very socially distanced, but that's their problem, not yours. At least you were.
No, we had it all in place that only the family members were downstairs amongst like an employee or two. And really, the rest of it was all their team. I couldn't believe how many of their team were there. They had so many medias, photographers, interviewers, reporters, So I blame the royals, not blame us, is what I'm going to say.
So might I suggest that if this royal malarkey doesn't work out for them and they're potentially, I don't know, for whatever reason they decide, I don't know, maybe abdication is the way forward. You got two potential new employees there that we may look out for on a Saturday night, please God, when we can all go back to normal.
Yeah. I think they're actually hoping to a certain extent that it takes place so that they can have a job down it and enjoy the 2 a.m. rush, which is what they really want to see.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Indeed, Elias, for telling us about it. I know that you are super busy, so I'll leave you to go back to whatever it is that you're cracking on with, probably making lots of deliciousness. But thank you very much indeed for telling us about this on the Jewish New Podcast.
And hopefully see you soon down the shop.
I really, really hope so.
You might get some free goodies, so you better hurry.
Hey, look, do you know what? I'm there, I tell you. Anyway, Shana Tova to you and your family. Thank you.
Shana Tova.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Time now for a humorous look on the world as we've come to know it, thanks to comedian Ashley Blaker.
Hello, Ashley Blaker here, back on the Jewish News Podcast for the final time in 5780. Because in 2 days' time, it's Rosh Hashanah, the new year 5781 begins. And I'm sure, for everyone, this is going to be the strangest Rosh Hashanah that they've ever experienced. Many synagogues are having services outside, they're having special shofar blowing outside, and there's going to be a lot of confused non-Jews thinking it's a fox hunt. Non-Jewish people are going to be coming outside their houses to see what's going on, expecting the horses and hounds to be coming past. Tally ho, Rabbi! No, they're going to be a little bit disappointed, I think. And we're taking on some new customs to mark this special Rosh Hashanah. For example, in our house this year, we're having apple dipped in soap to pray for a virus-free new year. And for those of you that don't know, I'm sure I'm among friends here, but the Jewish New Year, this isn't like the non-Jewish New Year. Because I think it's safe to say that non-Jews would absolutely hate Rosh Hashanah, because we have very different approaches to our holidays. You know, just compare our respective New Years to see how we can ruin any festival. You know, non-Jews are having a great time on New Year's Eve, counting down to midnight and then going crazy. My shul starts the New Year's service at 8 in the morning and doesn't finish until 3:30 in the afternoon. New Year as a big celebration, goyish. New Year as a day of judgment, Jewish. Getting ready for New Year by having a nice shower at home, goyish. Getting ready for New Year by going in a bath that 300 men have already been in and catching athlete's foot, Jewish. Enjoying good food at New Year, goyish. Having to eat the head of a fish, Jewish. Throwing yourself in the water at New Year, goyish. Throwing your sins in the water at New Year, Jewish. Thinking it's New Year, who am I going to kiss, goyish. Thinking, who will die at his predestined time? Who will die before his predestined time? Jewish. Thinking it's New Year, great, I need to take on some good resolutions, goyish. Thinking it's New Year, which means next week it's Yom Kippur and the service is even longer, Jewish. Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and old lang syne? Goyish. Avinu Malkeinu. Jewish. However, this year, I think the prayers really do need to be updated because, you know, all the who will live and who will die, who by fire and who by water, a little bit out of date. And frankly, probably not what most of us are actually thinking about this year. So I was thinking they actually really should update all the prayers. Should really be more, how many will leave their house and how many will self-quarantine? Who will be furloughed and who will need to get dressed for work again? Whose hair shall be cut at its predestined time? And whose months after its predestined time? Who by Zoom and who by Skype? Who by 2 meters and who by 1 meter? Who by teacher assessment and who by algorithm? Who by swallowing detergent and who by injecting detergent? Who will get a delivery slot and who will have to go to the supermarket in person? Who will have plentiful toilet paper and who will need to be careful with every sheet. Who will suffer homeschooling and who will be free of their children? Who will pile on the lockdown pounds? And who will be in denial and not weigh themselves? But hand washing, mask wearing, and social distancing remove the evil of the decree. Well, if you ever wondered why I'm a comedian and not a cousin, I think I've probably given you an answer. But in all seriousness, I hope you have a very good Rosh Hashanah, however strange it is, and a very happy and healthy and successful new year. I will see you, or at least speak to you, in 5781. Until next time, goodbye.
Marvellous stuff there, courtesy of comedian Ashley Blaker, giving us his views on the world as we've come to know it. And that's it for this edition of the Jewish News Podcast, brought to you in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to all of our guests, Deputy Israeli Ambassador Sharon Bar-Li, Neil Martin OBE, CEO of JLGB, Elias Cohen of Bagel Bake, comedian Ashley Blaker. Thank you also to our paper team, that's editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. And we must say thank you to Justin for producing this episode of the Jewish News Podcast. And thank you also goes to Adam Bradley for his work on post-production. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, then we would love to hear from you. You can email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, and from the whole team here, we wish you Lashana Tova, a very happy and healthy new year. Do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.